Welcome to episode 20 of The Ski Discussions. I'm your host, AB Basson. In this week's episode, I'm joined by South African football journalist Philile Mnyandu. After another failed qualifying campaign, what next for Bafana Bafana? Following defeat in Sudan, we'll miss out on another AFCON tournament. Vision 2022, mere fairy tale. Philile, thanks for joining me on The Ski Discussions once again. The main topic of conversation will be Bafana Bafana. Obviously, we're all distraught following their, you know, elimination from qualification and their failure to qualify for Cameroon next year. In a nutshell, what are your thoughts on our qualifying campaign? And, you know, what did you make of our performance in Sudan earlier this week?
Yeah, well, I think very disappointing, AB. Thanks for the opportunity again to invite me to your podcast. I think very disappointing. Disappointing, especially in the sense that this is a 24 team AFCON, you know? And when a country like South Africa can't even make a 24 team AFCON, you start to wonder if what's next. I know that previously we've had challenges, but those challenges were to qualify for the 16 team AFCON, where there are a number of other big guns who would miss out. But we were in Cairo, in Egypt, 2 years ago, and we ended up as one of the top eight teams there. Mm. So from being a top eight team on the continent to failing to be amongst top 24 teams 2 years later, it's disappointing. I know there are a lot of excuses that have been given, a lot of things, some of them for me, they don't really make sense because it's not only us that are affected. In fact, if I am to talk about COVID-19, COVID-19 affected, if you look, let's look at the Ghana game, for instance. Yes. Ghana had five debutants against Bafana Bafana. And Ghana, they rarely feature locally based players in their starting lineup in official A matches, yeah. You know, but in this situation, Ghana had four locally based players in that starting lineup, you know, and five debutants, you know, in total. So this that is a team that has been hugely affected by COVID-19. So COVID-19 has affected everyone, you know, and for me, this is where it's. I have to say it's just disappointing that we're not going to the AFCON. And I'm just short of ways of expressing it.
Yeah, I think everyone feels like that, and you know, especially watching the game against Sudan, conceding so early and then conceding another on the transition. I know Molefi and Seki said it in the build-up to the game that he was expecting, you know, them to come at us and we could maybe exploit them on the transition on the counter-attack. And how ironic that we were the ones punished on the counter-attack. What do you think went wrong in Khartoum and Omdurman? What do you think we did wrong in that match? Do you think our approach was, I know it's a difficult place to play in and people talk about the humidity, et cetera, but you come to expect these things when playing on the African continent, surely.
I think if you look at Sudan and you look at how they got to there are 12 points. You will see that Sudan, they won all their home matches, 100% winning record. And I think we've seen it even from the CAF Interclub competitions. You want to qualify, win your home matches. And that's what Sudan did. Yes, we will talk about the humidity, we'll talk about the ground there, we'll talk about how it's difficult for teams to come out of Sudan. But if we're talking about humidity, I remember in 2014, we went to Sudan with Bafana Bafana. It was Sheikh's first game. He won 3-0 in the same venue, you know, and under similar conditions, you know, and so it's not something that's difficult to achieve. But I think I must also say that. It was proven when Sudan beat Ghana that they're not an easy team to beat at home. So it means that Bafana Bafana should have won their game against Ghana at home. Also to go to that game with a bit of fear, for Sudan. You know, that even a win, just a win, it won't be enough, you know. But I think also conceding early also did affect us. And maybe especially playing in transitions, because I look at how we considered the second goal. Before we considered the second goal, there were moments where I was really not happy with how we were not compact between the midfield and the defense. And you could see that they're coming at us. And the lines were just too big. There was not compactness in how we're dealing with them. And they had a plan. And you look at their physical strength on the day. And at some stage, I was wondering if, did we come here really ready for this physical the battle, you know? So, and I know that people have also been having a lot of things to say, no, but you know what? We lack overseas-based players. We don't have enough players based overseas. We lost to a Sudanese team that only had two players playing outside Sudan.
Mm, true. One damning thing for me that was quite concerning, and I know the game wasn't picked up by SuperSport because of obviously the deal that KAF have with a different broadcaster, but you could still stream the game live. But during the game, most people were watching the Formula One. I know some were switching over to Bafana afterwards, but you know, as a country, that it felt to me like people had already lost hope with Bafana. Do you feel that's a damning statement on the national team? And you know, how do we get the pride back and get people watching the country, you know, again?
It's only through winning. It's only through winning, AB. Remember how people felt about Bafana 2 years ago in Egypt, the way we started, lackluster performances against Cote d'Ivoire, maybe not and really convincing out of the group stages. But also, I think if you look back to how we came out of the group and went on to beat the host Egypt, you know, yeah, you could see what did to the nation. People started to believe, you know, and this is the Bafana that we've seen previously, you know, that would go to a tournament and compete and advance to the next stage, and people rally behind the team, because no one will ignore a winning team, you know, and that's why for me this one is very disappointing. You know, we've seen teams like Gambia, we've seen Comoros, we've seen Ethiopia today. We've seen, my word, a number of teams that have qualified. We've seen Malawi, you know, now Sudan, teams that have qualified to this AFCON. Mauritania, returning to the AFCON, you know. So you count all those teams and you look at where our football is, especially domestically, you know, for us not to be amongst those teams, it's a huge indictment in our football. Right now, we'll be going to the World Cup qualifiers in June. We're in the same group with the same Ghana. We're in the same group with Zimbabwe, our neighbors. We're in the same group with Ethiopia. You know, and all those teams are going to the AFCON.
Yeah. I was about to get to that question. You actually stole the words out of my mouth. All three of those teams have qualified for AFCON. They'll be in our group for the qualifiers. We talk about Vision 2022. I mean, how do we get past this group to get on to Qatar and next year? You know, the World Cup's just around the corner. How do we change, you know, from not making AFCON to making the World Cup? How do we get that right?
I have to say to you, unfortunately, I'm not really positive about the way forward. I'm not really positive because I don't know what plan the FA has going forward. As you know, there's a press conference tomorrow where they will be looking back and giving the feedback on this qualification campaign. But I'm not expecting much from that press conference, you know. I just feel that technically we lack a vision, technically. You know, we seriously lack a vision. Yes, I'm looking forward to we were playing in the Olympics, you know, but Olympics is not the World Cup. Olympics is not the AFCON. It's still a junior competition, you know. Your football will always be judged by what the senior team does. And in this case, you know that the World Cup qualifiers will start in June and finish before the AFCON starts, because they finish in November. But you cannot tell me that if we cannot make a 24-team AFCON, that will be one of the top five teams going to the World Cup.
Yeah, it doesn't look good. Obviously, there'll be a lot of introspection, and you know, I don't really like what ifs in football. But if you look back at the squad that Molefi and Seki chose for games against Ghana and Sudan, a lot of people think that, you know, there were some players that should have been in the squad that weren't. You know, we'll see. You spoke about earlier about the strength of our domestic league and how good Sundowns are doing, and you know, Pirates have had positive results on the continent of late. You feel there's a few players that he should have had in the squad that weren't there. And obviously it's easy to look in reflection and say, yes, that person should have been there. But was there a few names that maybe stood out for you that should have really been on the plane to Sudan?
For me, out of the players who are missing, if you really look at it, the players that we couldn't get who were selected, Bongani Zungu, Keegan Dolly, Dean Furman, and Thulani Serero. And to be fair, Keegan has not really been playing for Montpellier. Yes, Zungu was one player that I would say were missing. I'm not really sure about Dean Furman, because he's also dropped down a bit now. We know what he can give you. We know that he's a workaholic. But Thulani Serero also has not been in the picture for that much, you know, but he's doing very well for his club. So we cannot really say we're really missing those players, you understand? Especially judging by the kind of opposition that we're up against as well, you know. But I think for me, some of the players that I feel that were really missing, Lebohang Motiba up front, he's been out injured for a very long time. But you know, I think now going forward, the time has come for Coach Nseki, or whoever is gonna continue with the team. The time has come to refresh the team properly, you know, and I know that the priority is being given to the Olympics, but we need to see those players who are in the under-23 who've been to the under-20 to the World Cup, under-20 World Cup, and who've qualified for the Olympics. We see Victor Osimhen, we see Chukwueze playing for the Nigerian Super Eagles. That's what we want to see, even with our boys, you know. People who are going to come and show some hunger, you know. So for me, I think the team needs to be transformed now.
You touched on Seki, and you know, if he keeps his job or not, we'll find out later this week. Do you think it's a bit naive blaming him and solely him for the failures of, you know, this AFCON campaign? You know, like we mentioned before the podcast started, we've missed out on a few AFCONs now in the past decade. And frankly, you know, for a country like South Africa with the domestic league that we've got, and, you know, I think, you know, we pride ourselves and we hold ourselves at a greater standard. Do you think it's naive to blame him? Do you think there should be introspection at a deeper level at SAFA House?
No, I think whoever just blames Coach Nseke only is missing the point. As I was saying here, that the biggest problem facing SAFA, and in fact, South African football entirely, is a lack of technical vision. You know, if you look at even at PSL club level, you look at some clubs, the technical decisions that get taken, the recruitment of coaches, the recruitment of players, all of those things. You ask if, is there a standardized approach? Is there a formula that's being followed? are there standards that are being set to say if a coach with a D license can be coaching international players, is that something acceptable, being trained week in, week out, and those same players must go and play for the national team? You understand those things. SAFA, yes, I know that we pride ourselves in having qualified for under 17, under 20 tournaments, and now even the Olympics. But was that by design or by accident? What is the clear technical vision? You know, and I'm basing this on some of my conversations with some of the junior national team coaches who've complained in the past about not having things like just a mere camp, you know, even in terms of, we always talk about going to Europe to monitor players, but I don't think there's been a Bafana coach in the last 2 years who's been overseas to monitor our talent overseas, you know, you know, I was sharing something that there's a picture that interested me last week. A technical director of the Ghanaian Football Association, he was on the ground with the president of the FA. They were at the training session, I think, for 2 days in succession. I haven't seen even our acting technical director around our national teams. You understand?
Yeah.
So, in fact, we don't have a technical director currently. I know that the FA is going through a phase of restructuring. But if I can look at the standards, with the previous technical director, maybe I think the last time I could see a proper technical director who had vision at SAFA was Seramile Tswaka, and that's more than 7 years ago.
You spoke about the transition between, you know, from youth level to senior level and, you know, qualifying for these tournaments, if it's by luck or by judgment. If I'm just going through, you know, names in my head, you know, former under 20 captains, you'd think of Tertius Malepe, you think of Ayo Balela. You know, you go through all these names, you think of Kanisa Mayo, who's obviously now doing well at Richards Bay. You know, he was a star at youth level, but we seem to struggle to get, you know, players from youth level that are great at that level to be a star at senior level. How do we cross that bridge and get over that hurdle?
Yeah, so that's why I'm saying, with all the resources that we have locally, commercially off the field, we don't seem to have a proper plan for the core business of football, you know, which is on the pitch. You know what I mean? There are a lot of things that when I look at some other countries on the continent that are not well-resourced as we are, but you can see the technical vision from them, you know, in terms of proper scouting, also just following the processes. You know, there's just a lot of things for me. You know, I love what the MDC has done in recent years for our game, you know, but in terms of quality, are we really getting quality out of it? You know, I'm not sure. And when I mean quality, AB, I mean players. Right now, we talk about not producing enough players to go and play in Europe and break into the top leagues, you know. What is the plan? What is the technical plan? What is the plan? And for me, there's always talk of how to revive schools football as well, but we know that for the past 5 years or so, schools football has been politicized, you know, and given a chance. We've had even Dr. Petrus Motsepe talking about this at CAF, that he wants to revive schools football. Given a chance, it can work for us, you know, because the talent is there. But I think we've gone for the past few years now, there's no action around that space, you know? So you know, we love football, you know, we love football. And when we see other things, because we're not talking about things that we don't know, we see other things happening in other countries, countries that are not well-resourced like us, you know, they've got nothing, but they just know that there's a technical director, and this technical director here, he's going to move, and he's got maybe 10 national scouts, and from there, they identify players from there, and then those players, they move from there, you know, you know, all those things. You don't have a situation where the scouting is done by agents, you know, where the real talent now is not coming up, because now the scouting has been outsourced to agents, and this is a problem. And for me, I also disagree when people say the problem is when our players are remaining here at home. We must have that equal balance, because to have a strong football industry in the country, the league should also be stronger. That's why we have players who come back from Belgium and they get paid three times what they are getting in Belgium. Yeah, you know, but there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. But equally, our structures, technically, they must be the best. You know, they must be the best. They must be skilled coaches. And also there must be clear proper processes. Because currently the problem is that you have one or two or three PSL clubs with clear structures and processes, and then you have the rest with nothing.
Yeah.
You know? Or they differ a lot, you know? There's nothing that is standardized. And that's where you hope that something like club licensing will come and help. But it's not really happening.
Yeah, I actually had a good chat with KB about club licensing, and it's just a very interesting topic. And I think we've discussed this before as well. But I'd just like to quickly touch on Gambia and Comoros. You talk about the disparity between resources, and you know, you think a nation like South Africa should be qualifying for AFCON, but then you look at Comoros and Gambia and you think, you know, how the hell did they get there? You know, Comoros, Amer Abdou was appointed the head coach in 2014. He's obviously had a 7-year project and qualified them. Their story is just, you know, remarkable. You know, just how amazing is it for them? And also Gambia, looking at their influence and their players playing in Europe, you know, they've got a lot of exciting talent coming through, especially in Italy. You know, just for those who don't know and not so in touch with the African game, how big of a deal is it that, you know, Gambia and Comoros will be at AFCON next year?
You know, I've been following Comoros a lot, because they've been playing the COSAFA Cup, and especially with their coach, and it's a beautiful story, that one of Comoros. And if you remember, there's a team, I think they played Kaizer Chiefs a few years ago in the CAF Champions League preliminary stages. Can't remember, Moroto or something, you know. So, but I think what they've done now, they got a number of players who play in the lower divisions in France, to come and be behind the team, you know, and we've seen this also working for Madagascar 2 years ago, when Madagascar qualified to Cairo, remember?
Yeah.
That was the situation. But for Comoros, I think the way, and I think now people have also been talking about Gambia, like you say. Gambia has been a very good project. I was talking to Rido Bedin. Now, you know that Rido is also a well-traveled physical conditioner.
Yeah,
he's been with Togo. He qualified with Togo in 2017. In 2012, he qualified with Botswana, which was also making its maiden appearance back then. Now, this is his third AFCON, you know? He was also telling the story of how even in the previous qualifiers, they had stood up to Algeria, an Algerian team that went on to win the AFCON tournament 2 years ago, you know. So the story of how these teams got to the AFCON differs. Because some of them, you find that, yes, take for instance, Madagascar. Madagascar, they were there 2 years ago, but they're not there now, you know. You are going to have those fairy tale stories. But as to whether those teams have got the capacity to return to the AFCON again, it's a different story, because sometimes you find that there's this short route of getting players who grew up in Europe, you know. But I think the story of Gambia and Comoros differs. Comoros have gone this route of getting players who come from that side. But with Gambia, they've been building the process. If you look at players like Moussa Baro, who plays for Bologna in Syria. In Italian Syria, you know. So their results over the years. So they've been coming up, and now that's why they've even given coach Tom Saintfiet extended his contract for 5 years, you know.
Yeah, which you don't really see on the African continent.
Yes. Because you see, if you look at the story of Nigeria and you look at Jonah Draw, Jonah Draw is now coaching Nigeria for 5 years. This has rarely happened previously with Nigerian coaches, that he can be there for a five-year period. But with him, that's the case, because it means that they are happy, you know. And you look during this phase, at the last AFCON, they were bronze medalists. I remember, I think it was for 2017, they had failed to qualify for the AFCON. They didn't fire him. You know what he did? He qualified them for the World Cup the following year. You know?
Yeah.
So I know one will be saying maybe they are hoping that's what South Africa can do, you know? But you see, what I was trying to say is that on the continent, if you know that maybe your team is not strong enough, your players are not strong enough, at least your bench must be strong enough. You know, your bench must be strong enough in terms of the technical team. That's all I'm going to say.
That's a good point, Vilile. And maybe we should just chat on, just to close off, just on, you know, who do you think is, it's still very early doors, obviously. But do you think who's some of the nations to keep an eye out for at next year's AFCON? I know the qualifying campaign has not even ended yet. I think we still have 4 games on the go as we are chatting right now. But obviously a team like Algeria, you know, defending champions, and just a wealth of experience they have and wealth of talent they have. You think of Senegal, you think of Morocco, who's got, you know, a few players, you know, doing really well, especially, you know, 3 players at Sevilla, for example, Hakim Ziyech, who's a high quality player. Who do you think are some of the nations that we should keep an eye out for at next year in Cameroon? You know, not drifting away from Cameroon as well, who shocked the world, obviously shocked the African continent a few years back when they won against all odds. Who do you think are some of the nations that will stand out at next year's AFCON?
Well, very interesting. Very interesting call that you want me to make. But I think for me, as things stand, I don't see anyone dethroning the Algerians. You know, remember, I think they're unbeaten in how many matches now? Is it 20?
Yeah, it's 20 something.
Yeah, I think 24 or 25 matches that they are unbeaten in now, you know. And if you look at the way they cropped Botswana as well yesterday, you can see that this is a team that means business, you know. But obviously, Senegal, I rank them high up there as well. And these were the finalists also. Remember, they lost to Algeria in the final 2 years ago. And then Mali will always be there. And I also like how Mali, from time to time, they get to refresh their team. You can see that the success of their junior national teams is always reflected, even in the senior team as well. You know, and they don't miss a moment. They don't miss a moment. I think Mali is one of the few teams, even during these qualifiers, to use two teenagers. You know, so for me, when you look at that, and I'm not really sure about Ghana, but Morocco. I think given a chance, Morocco, for me, they will be semi-finalists in Cameroon. And also, I'm interested to see what will the Indomitable Lions do at home, because Cameroon is a footballing country. We saw even during Chan, you know. So I'm very interested in that. But I'm not really sure about Egypt. I see Egypt as a team that depends on the mood of Salah. Maybe there's a bit of over-reliance there on Salah. And I'm also not really sure about Cote d'Ivoire, but I think the Super Eagles, you remember they were bronze medalists in the last competition, and the way they are building up. And remember, most teams will be coming to, in fact, most of the teams that have qualified, they'll be coming from the conclusion of the World Cup qualifiers. Yeah. So the World Cup qualifiers, they start with the group stages, and that will be 40 teams, right? That will be playing there. Then only the group winners out of all those groups will go and play in the final playoff of home and away. Then the five teams qualify to the World Cup. So by November, we'll know which five teams are going to the World Cup. And the AFCON will be starting in 2 months' time. So you can imagine how exciting. We're in for a very exciting program. And for me, with all due respect, I think the five teams that will qualify for the World Cup are teams that will be going to the AFCON.
Very exciting indeed, Vulile. It's just a real pity as Bafana Bafana supporters, we won't be able to watch our team, but hopefully they can do the business in the World Cup qualifiers. Thanks again for your time, and enjoy your time at home, and happy Easter. And yeah, thanks again for your expertise and your insight. I really enjoy speaking to you and spending time with you, and all the best. Stay safe.
Thank you, AB. I really hope that our team can go out there and redeem themselves and do it for the nation. Because Bafana Bafana, we love football. We've always been behind them, but they've disappointed the nation a lot, you know. Yeah. And here, by association, SAFA as well is equally to blame for this downward spiral of our national team.
Yeah, most definitely. On that note, I say goodbye. Thanks, Vulile. Thanks again, and all the best. Thank you for listening to Disky Discussions. If you have any questions or guests you'd like me to have on the show, please hit me up at AB_Basson on Twitter or on Instagram. Stay safe, like, subscribe, aware.